amazing, fantastic, kissing our own ass episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast.
That's right.
And I don't know, I was being, I had an egotistical moment there for a second. I don't know, man. I was
pretty,
listening to
we're pretty important, man. People know us.
I was listening to, you know, I don't always listen to our episodes. You know, I used to back in the day, like I would re-listen to them and then I'd be critical of myself and I'm like, ah, I sound fucking stupid. I don't, you know, why'd I listen to that? And I was listening to, not the Captain America one, I guess it was a couple weeks old. And I was like, yeah, you know, we're pretty good at this thing. You know, I was like thinking, I mean, so I was tooting my own horn, but I guess in 10 years we should have learned something, you know.
We've
about what we're doing.
Yeah, we've gotten good at what we do, you know.
I mean, we might only be famous in our own minds, and you know, but and not everyone might think we're funny, but I think we're funny.
And that one bedroom in Hungary.
It was, you know, the episode a couple weeks ago where we were going off about Sydney Sweeney. That's when I was just laughing. I was like,
that was pretty good.
And I was just like, you know, yeah, she's something. You know,
she is.
She could be my Hooters girl any day.
For real, man.
But yeah, so we are etching closer to our official 10th anniversary as we move on. And there's a lot coming up, man. We've got Ghostbusters in a couple weeks, then Godzilla X Kong, and then before you know it, it's going to be April, and we're going to be watching Planet of the Apes. We'll be going to Comp-Palooza, you know. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome. You know, you think about everything that's coming up, man. And somewhere in all that will be our 10th anniversary episode. And that's pretty cool, you know.
A lot coming up, man.
Yeah, a lot going on. And so it's cool. I'm excited to get to that point. And we take it a day at a time. And, you know, but other than that, man, I've been on vacation this week, which has been pretty swell for the most part. I had some fun. Also got some things accomplished this week, you know, which is good. Around the house, I kind of tend to be an adult teenager in some ways, and I don't put my clothes in drawers. So there's like clothes all over my room. I'm not saying they went into drawers today, but they're folded on a table at the end of my bed. Pile of shorts, pile of shirts, pile of work clothes, and underwear.
They're organized. So at least
they're folded. Yeah.
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 Hey, you know, progress. Yeah.
And it was funny is I have a dresser with like clothes I don't wear in it. Is that terrible?
You're like, that's where I keep the clothes I don't wear.
Yeah. Yeah. They're there in case I ever want to wear them. But I'm sure I'm not the only one out there that's like that, you know. But so I got that done today. You know, I accomplished something. You know, and I took the kids to the zoo. Which
good.
Any of you local people that listen to us here in Houston, man, if you haven't been to the zoo in a while, it's great, man. It's world class exhibits. They've cleaned it up so much. The Houston Zoo tends to have this bad rap about it, I guess, because it's over near Bentaub Hospital. And for anybody that doesn't know, Bentaub is the non-insurance free hospital. So you get the cronies hanging around it, you know, you get the homeless and things like that. So and it's in the middle of Herman Park, which is pain in the ass to get in and out of parking. It took me almost an hour to park. I'm not going to lie.
Yes.
It's awful, you know? So the zoo gets a bad rap, but if you get an option to go to it, man, it's fucking fantastic. They've done so much work to it. They've got an incredible new exhibit with penguins and cold animals in it. The new elephant exhibits are fantastic. The African safari exhibits are amazing. Yeah, I mean, just really good. It really is way better than it gets credit for. It's just, unfortunately, and I wouldn't sound like it's a bad part of town when I say that, because it's not. It's just not in a convenient part of town. That's a good way to say it, okay. You know, if that makes sense. I don't know when the last time you were out there, Matt, to go to the zoo, but it's just like, you know, it's not a convenient part of town.
I want to say it's been like 3 years. I don't think
that's not that long ago.
Yeah, since like 21.
Yeah, that's not that long ago. So, you know, so you've been since they've done a lot of the upgrades and, you know, but that was cool, man. You know, it was fun, man. It was a good time. I actually really enjoyed it. A lot of it was good weather. So a lot of the animals were out, kids got to see a lot. So it was cool. And then yesterday I took a trip back down memory lane and made a return almost exactly a year to the day to the Houston Toy Museum, and went and saw the guy out there, Matt, who runs it, and his wife.
Yeah, Matt and his wife.
Yeah. Fantastic job. They do a fantastic job setting up that place. I talked to Matt a little bit yesterday, and just that's a funny. Shout out to today. Him. Yeah, that's all that you went today. I was, you know, I guess we should have coordinated that. Maybe we could go on the same day, but you know, but man, I'd been there before. That was your first time, huh? What did you think, man?
Yeah, no, I liked it. And I was talking to him, and he was telling me that he mentioned to me he had a Predator exhibit, a little Predator section. And it's a small section of Predator. Right. Yeah, if you're going too fast, you'll miss it. But he's got Predator figures there. But yeah, he was just, talking about, how he's a big Predator fan. I mentioned Arnold to him, of course, you know. And so we brought up Misfit Toys. And he's like, oh, you know, Daniel. And I said, we know each other. We've done some podcasts there. And he mentioned how he's had people at the Houston Toy Museum kind of do a podcast there just to kind of have it in the backdrop. And he's kind of open to that thing. And I was like, maybe we'll follow up one day on that. I was like, that sounds pretty fun. But you know, I told him, I was like, yeah, last time I saw Daniel, it was at the old location that was, you know, right by here. And I traded some DBZ figures for an Arnold NECA figure, from, the T-800 from Terminator 2. And he was like, oh, I like Predator. And so we started talking about toys that way and NECA and some of that cool stuff. But he's a great guy. I asked him, cause I have some artwork, from the set. They were actually cartoon pieces that were used in some of those Burger King movies. And I asked him if he's open to, you know, buying or trading for some of that stuff. Cause I'm like, you know, I don't know how well I can keep it. And I don't know how well my kids will maintain it if I pass it on. So I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if it was in his museum and I could just be like, hey, that was, you know, that was mine at one point. Now it's here. And that'd be pretty cool. So he was like, oh, shoot me what you got. So I'm going to follow up with him maybe.
I was asking about, if he had a He-Man slime pit, the Hordak slime pit. And he said, no, whatever He-Man he has is out there. See, I ain't asking for no thin return. I told him I'm going to donate mine to him. I'm going to try to bring it to
him. Dang.
See, man, you cheapskate, man. I told him I'd donate. See, cause I thought the same thing, man. It'd be cool to have something that can stay in that museum forever. Cause I imagine Matt and his wife will hopefully turn it over to their kids, you know, one day, and they keep it running. And it can be something that people see for a long time. And I think what's cool about the museum is, you walk in and it has appearance of kind of a small building as you walk in, but you go upstairs up top and it's quite large and lots of potential for growth. There's way more room up there. It looks, there's lots of room in this display for more stuff. And he was talking about that. He goes, yeah, I've got plenty of room. It's just finding time and money to do it all and do more. You know, cause basically just a 2 or 3 in-person operation they're doing. And, he's just working a little bit at a time and getting it going. And he's got a lot. I mean, he added quite a bit of stuff from when I was there last year. You know, I mean, not tons, but enough to make it worth going again, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what makes it worth it. And just, it's over on 19th Street in the Heights here in Houston, and just awesome, awesome. The Houston Toy Museum.
Dude, it's right down from Torchy's Tacos. If you're going to go get some tacos, just walk right. It's like five shops down. Yeah. I debated on it. I was like, I should get Torchy's, and I'm going to let Mark know I'm at Torchy's.
Yeah. And I would give you a hard time. Yeah. But you always tell me they're white people tacos.
Yeah. And then, but the kids, I know, man, maybe Jake and Joe will eat tacos, but the other two.
Well, they have quesadillas there too.
Maybe they're picky, but I knew they'd want ice cream. So I went across the street from there to that Jenny's. High price,
not that good ice cream place. I saw that.
Your picture. Dude. Oh my God. I didn't know. The ice cream was good, but it wasn't that good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that.
I would have been, stuff. Yeah, I would have been better off just going and buying like 3 pints of Ben and Jerry's and some ice cream cones. And I would have been fine. I got to the register and it was like, $40. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you should. Yeah, I made the mistake last year, and then eating the kids like this, like the it's like these weird flavors, and I'm that great. It's
yeah,
I gotcha.
Some of the flavors are weird, but then there's some that are like, you know, regular, like they have like chocolate overload, and it's just chocolate. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, that's what I'm getting. I'm getting the one that's just chocolate.
Yeah. Yep, they got you.
They got me, man. They freaking got me.
Sinker. It's like marble slab, overpriced.
It's can't true. Win them all.
But yeah, so we applaud one small business, the Houston Toy Museum. We dog Jenny's Ice Cream, but hey, can't win them all.
Yeah,
you know,
you can't win them all.
I'm not gonna lie to you in here. Don't go to Jenny's Ice Cream unless you want to pay $12 for a scoop of ice cream. Yeah.
I will say they are cool people, but they're not that cool. All right, you know. My street cred did not go up from leaving that place.
I mean, a street worker might make me scream for $20. That don't mean I'm going to give it to her, you know.
Exactly. Just just saying.
But the Houston Toy Museum is awesome, man. And other than that, man, it's been a kind of a quiet week. We got an announcement today that, you know, you start, you know, with the James Gunn and his new DCU, man. It's, you know, we have the old DC Extended Universe that has now ended. And you look back on it, and there's some stuff that was good, and there's some stuff that you feel they could have done better. And you look at what James Gunn is doing, and you're a little bit like nervous when you start hearing about weird things like Creature Commandos and stuff like that, the Authority, not super well-known things, right? But you're trying to trust in James and what he's doing with Superman Legacy. So they announced today that there's a be a live action Teen Titans movie on the slate. And this is something I always felt that was when DCU had first started. I'm going back to 2013 when Man of Steel came out, right? Or 2011, whatever it was. Like Teen Titans was more popular than it had been in years. And all because of the Teen Titans Go cartoon. That cartoon was so popular. Kids everywhere knew who Robin and Cyborg were and all these characters, right? And it's like, it almost felt like you should have been developing Teen Titans back then. You know, as a live action film, there were a lot of rumors about it for a long time. You know, it never happened. We got the Titans TV show, which is actually was pretty good on Max. I'll give it some credit, even though it's a little too adult for children, still pretty solid. But you know, we never got that film. And now they announced that James Gunn and his company and his new DC are going to make a Teen Titans movie. And, I think that's pretty badass, you know, and hopefully,
I think they have to, since they led with Blue Beetle.
Well, yeah, and I think that it makes sense, man. I think Gunn, if there's one team, I'm a little nervous about Gunn Superman, but there's one thing that if he's involved in Teen Titans, that feels like a team that he can get right and will do it right. Yeah. It just feels like that's fit for his style and his and I'm not, we don't even know if he's going to direct or how involved he's going to be in it yet. But man, doesn't it awfully feel like, hey, I'm making Superman. Let's announce this next thing that I'm probably going to direct. When I'm done with Superman Legacy. That's just what it feels like. It's just the timing of his and the announcement of the Teen Titans movie just feels like, you know, wouldn't be surprised.
I think if he can capture what he did with Guardians and transfer it onto Teen Titans, that it's going to work pretty damn good.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think it's cool, man. And I think, does it all but confirm we're going to get a live action Robin and Batman Brave and the Bold? No, not officially, but it sure feels like it. You know, there's you know, it feels like the time is right for a live action Robin. So that was kind of big news. And the other news this week, man, we got our first trailer for The Crow. You know, I know we were really harsh on this a couple weeks ago, and I'm not loosening up my harshness from the first image ideas. I'll say this about the trailer. The trailer's not as bad as I thought. Okay. But it also doesn't look great either. It looks kind of like a generic action flick. And that's not a knock against Bill Skarsgård. I think he looks pretty cool in the role, you know, in his attitude and in the short time we see him on screen. But man, does this not feel like your typical 21st century? Let's see how much gore we can get in it. And it just, man, the trailer is extremely gory and it's all that fake watery CGI looking blood, which really kind of bothered me.
Like a fucking water balloon getting splattered.
But I'm still not jumping to go see it or anything. I know I'll watch it eventually. I shouldn't say I'm not going to see this film because I think I'll watch it eventually, but I'm still not like a pump for it or anything, you know?
I have my reservations. You have yours. I think it's not as bad as I thought it was going to look, but it still doesn't look good. To your point.
And then they put Danny Huston in there as a bad guy. He's always such a bad actor in most things. He's one of those guys. He's just not good. He never is on screen. I don't know how the guy keeps getting roles. I don't know, man. We'll see. I don't know who the hell FKA Twigs is, whatever her name is. He's playing Shelly. But yeah, it's fine. Whatever. If you know anything about The Crow, Shelly's part is pretty small, at least in the comics and even in the original film. So
her job is to die.
It still didn't feel like. Here's my biggest thing with it. Watching the trailer, like even the Brandon Lee film in the original, even though it's not just like the comics, there's images that stand out that are like the comic book, right? This entire 2.5 minute Crow trailer, there was one image that reminded me of the comic. And that's when he's walking in the trench coat towards the camera. That's it. One single shot. Other than that, it didn't feel like anything from the Crow comic, it didn't feel dark and goth enough either. It was kind of colorful and bloody.
It was actually kind of bright.
Yeah. So we'll see, man. I'm not holding out hopes, but I don't know.
And then the way the scenes cut after he gets shot, it makes it look like maybe he goes back into the spirit world or something. And then he wakes back up and then comes back too. And I feel like that's going to be an issue.
Based on the test screenings, you're close. That's people said, or something like that, where he walks the line between worlds.
Yes.
And I thought that was weird.
Yeah. It's like, well, he goes into another world and then there's like a guide of his or something that's like, hey, guess what? You're not really dead.
In the original comic, the Skull Cowboy is his guide kind of between worlds and tries to, but he never goes back in the land of the dead. The Skull Cowboy keeps him on the path.
Yeah.
So maybe it's some version of the Skull Cowboy, but I noticed it too. And from whatever about the test screening, you're almost hitting the nail on the head. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's just once, probably not bad, but it's like, it looks like it's multiple times. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And does the Bullet with Butterfly Wings song on the trailer kind of help with hope that maybe the soundtrack's as good as the 90s one? Maybe. Not that that's a great band or anything, but at least, they used a decent, song or whatever. Yeah. So we'll see.
Can't rain all the time.
Yeah, that's it. But speaking of the DCU, man, I watched Aquaman and Lost Kingdom. And dude, if you like the first one, you'll like it, man. You got to judge for yourself, man. Don't read what Justin wrote on his Facebook.
Yeah. I keep trying to watch it. I fell asleep again, man.
People are too harsh on things. If you like the first one, you'll like it. It was fine. I enjoyed it, man. I sat and watched it and had some legit, funny moments and some good action. And, I think I did feel like watching it kind of like I watched a Blue Beetle and the Flash, knowing that that it's not going anywhere. So I have to really watch it as like, okay, this is it. Just watch this and enjoy it for what it is, since the DCU is dead. But it was fun. I'm going to miss Momoa in that part. He was good.
Yeah, but if he is Lobo, man, he looks so much like Lobo already.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, whenever he's like on the motorcycle in Lost Kingdom, riding around, going in circles, and I'm like, man, he looks like Lobo would look. All he needs is the makeup. The hair is already there. He's having fun on a motorcycle. He looks like the bounty hunter, Lobo.
Well, yeah, man, it was good, man. I like I said, I'm not gonna knock it. I probably enjoyed more than I enjoyed the Marvels. And that's silly if people say wouldn't watch it because Amber Heard's in it. I mean, she didn't poop on your bed. She pooped on Johnny Depp's bed. It's fine.
Exactly.
It is what it is.
You got to go. You got to go.
Her and her assets can appear in any movie they want. I don't care.
I'm still going to watch Drive Angry. And that's right. I'm going to watch her in those freaking cutoff shorts.
Damn right.
That's what you're going to do. That's a crazy ass movie, though. We got to do that one day. we'll have one of those ridiculous ass movie months.
I also watched I had never seen Fighting with My Family.
Okay.
I finally sat down and watched that, and that's really good.
I liked it.
I mean, I knew I had heard it was good. I just had never gotten around to watching it, and I actually had a coupon. I don't know if I had like 15% off on Vudu or something for. So I was like, you know what? And it was cheaper just to buy it than to rent it. I was like, oh, am I supposed to buy it? So
yeah,
and so bought it, and I actually watched it with the kids, and we all enjoyed it, man. It was a fun movie. All based on a true story, of course, about the wrestler Paige and her story coming in the WWE. It took some money. You know, I'm always looking up. Well, this is kind of something we just do because we do a podcast. You know, you watch it, you'll look up stuff about the movie, right? It's just a natural thing, you know, that we do. And they changed some minor things, like Vince Vaughn's character is basically a combination of Dusty Rhodes and Mick Foley, and they call him Hutch. I guess maybe the Rhodes family and maybe Mick Foley did not sign off their likenesses to be in the movie, so that's why they combined the characters. It's the only thing I could get, you know, because maybe, which seems, I can see the Rhodes family doing that. Seems a little weird that Mick Foley wouldn't do it, but maybe the writers of the movie decided once the Rhodes family didn't sign off, we'll just combine the characters, which for storytelling makes sense. It makes sense. You know, because Mick Foley, this is the guy who's signed books, does book signs, and has never been shy of making a book. Let's just be honest. So it would seem that weird that he wouldn't have said no to being a part of the movie, you know? So, you know, maybe that's one of the things. And then some of the things like, she went from in the movie, she goes from being on NXT to live television in one night, which really did happen, but she was familiar with TV at that point. She had already been NXT champion. NXT was starting to air on TV back in 2013-14 for the first time. So she was aware with how TV was done and how it worked. So that wasn't exactly new to her, but they had to make it more exciting for the movie, you know, had to build
more dramatic,
you know, and, but I can see why Marvel nabbed her, man, for her first big starring role in Black Widow, man. Florence Pugh is quite a young star, man. She's really good in that movie, you know, and that was 2018 or 2019. So, you know, she was maybe 20, 21 years old at the time she made
it. Me and Long saw an early screening of that film. I won tickets, which I never win anything. And I got picked. And we saw it at Edwards Greenway. And
I remember y'all mentioning that. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know?
Yeah. It was fun. That was the first time I've ever won an advanced screening.
Yeah.
But it was cool. And Florence has definitely bloomed into quite the actress, even filming in another thing, in another film that you watched.
What's crazy is how she, how much she looks like the real Paige. That's what's wild about it.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I went to the theaters, man, and I saw a goddamn masterpiece, if I'm being honest.
Yes.
And that's Dune Part Two. Man, this thing was incredible. I mean, it's blowing my mind to think that in 3 months I've seen two absolutely incredible films, with Godzilla Minus One and now Dune Part Two. And we talk about this all the time, that is cinema dead? No, it's not, man. We're still filmmakers that are making stuff that gives us hope for the future.
Yes.
And Denis Villeneuve, man, this guy is a master director. And Doom Part Two is freaking amazing from start to finish. It was done. I'm like, that's it? 2 hours 40. It's over. 2 hours and 45
flies,
minutes.
Dude.
I was like, wow, flies. It's over. Man, I'm like, no disrespect to Oppenheimer, which I loved, and it won Best Picture, by the way. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Oppenheimer, I'm sitting looking at my watch, like, golly, this is a long movie. But man, dude, I didn't feel that at all. You know, such an incredible movie. I mean, from the set pieces. Flawless fucking CGI. I mean, I know Godzilla Minus One just won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects, and that's great. I'm so glad it did. The big guy deserves it. That the amazing 35 people that worked on that film deserve it. But you might as well hand the Oscar to Dune right now. Maybe Kingdom for the Planet of the Apes gives it a slight run from just looking at the trailer, but Dune's winning that fucking Oscar next year. This is some absolutely flawless CGI. Amazing acting across the board. Yeah. From Rebecca Ferguson and Timothée Chalamet to Zendaya to everyone in this film is amazing. The story is, I mean, good Lord, Austin Butler, this kid is going to be, he's already a star. He's going to be even bigger star. I mean, what he's done in Elvis to playing, how do you say his name? Fade or whatever. He's ruthless. Mm-hmm. He's badass. I mean, and this guy looks like he's loving it. Like, I'm being evil and I'm enjoying every second of it.
Yeah. And apparently he's like a really nice guy. And it's like, whoa, who is this guy who's showed up on screen?
And the funniest part is I read too, when he showed up on set, he was having trouble getting rid of his Elvis accent for a long time. And he kept having to redo scenes in his right accent because he was like trying to talk like Elvis. And they're like, Austin, no, that's the wrong voice. Yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Oh.
And but that kid, man, is going to be a star, man. You can see it already. Man, this movie, it's the movie of the year, man. You know, it's just that's how good it is. I'd be hard pressed to find anything that's going to come out this year. It's going to be better. I mean, they're already, it could win the Oscars next year. It could be next year's best picture. The first movie was nominated and won a lot of awards. And this movie, rightfully so, man, if you shied away from Dune or from science fiction, and I was one of those people that was kind of like, you know, Lords and Barons, I couldn't get into it. But now, man, I'm a fan. I'm sold on it now.
Yeah, that's exactly now, how I felt.
I'm not ready to go jump and read the book. Cause let me tell you, I try listening to audiobook on YouTube. It's not that exciting. I don't know if I can read the book, but because it's, you know, it's written in 1965, so it's a certain style. It's hard to read that old stuff, man. And but man, it's just such an amazing film. Cannot recommend this enough. See on the big screen. And that said, just like you, I had to go back and watch Dune 84, the original, even though I'd seen it years ago. And my God, what a horrible movie! I shouldn't say horrible. It has a 1980s feel for it.
Yeah.
The story is, you don't realize how condensed the story is until you've seen the new Dunes and you go back and watch this and you're like, wow, they throw like lots of information really fast in 2 hours. And it's cut weird. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
There's just cuts after cuts after cuts.
The dream sequences are good, but you don't know what the fuck is happening when they show up.
They cut so much. And they use narration to try to explain to you things, and the narration doesn't make any sense. And it's almost like a series of highlights from the book instead of a movie.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I'm trying to think, there's nothing I really liked in it. Other than I'll give the worms credit for 1984. Special effects aren't bad.
Worms ain't bad.
But that's about it. But on a rewind, back to Dune Part 2, you know, that movie, man, just incredible, man. I can't say enough, man. You know how awesome it was.
Yeah, man. The only thing is that they ran out of those buckets, and I think Frank may have bought them all because of how they were shaped.
I've heard about the buckets.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're going for $100 on Amazon or on eBay.
Yeah. Hey, still cheaper than a hooker.
It is.
But I went on. Yeah, I went last Sunday night, man, and it was pretty crowded too, man, for a Sunday night screening. So people are going to see it. And it
might be seeing it twice.
And there's been Denis Villeneuve's writing Dune Messiah or Dune Part 3, whatever he decides to call it. And he said he's going to take a little break before he directs it because there's a time gap and everything in it. And I'm going to stay spoiler free because I know people want to see this. And this is one of those movies that you want to see it fresh. You know, even if you've seen the original Dune, there's things in this that are going to surprise you. I know there's one big thing that's really bugging the hardcore Dune fans. They didn't like he changed the movie. And it has to do with Paul Atreides' heritage. But you know what? I have no qualm with that. I don't care. I haven't read the book. It doesn't bother me that much. I always try to take films as different interpretations. And now that said, I know I'm pretty hardcore about The Crow and how that movie is, but I don't think The Crow is as complex as Dune. It shouldn't be hard to tell The Crow on the big screen from a 140 page graphic novel. It should be a lot harder to take a 900 page book and turn into a couple of films. So you're going to take some liberties with it, you know? And I think that's fair to say. But man, Dune Part 2, man, just remarkable. And that's really, I mean, all I watch. I mean, I am caught up on The Bad Batch. Well, I have to watch, there was two new episodes this week. I haven't watched the second one yet. But, but other than that, those are the main things I watched. Because I feel like I'm talking a lot about things I watched.
That's all good. You saw a lot of stuff, you know, that's what we like to hear. I went and watched an Oscar winning movie this past weekend. That was Poor Things. Emma Stone and Mark Ruffalo and Green Goblin. Why can't I think of his name right now?
William Dafoe.
Yep. So those are three main characters.
Everyone says William. It's not Willem. William, it's Willem.
It's basically a Frankenstein-ish story. And William is like Dr. Frankenstein. Emma is basically his creation. And Mark Ruffalo is just a guy that's trying to take advantage of her. But she's basically brought back to life by William Dafoe, and she's trying to learn how to relearn things, basically. She walks very awkwardly. Emma Stone conveying the body movements of someone who doesn't really know how to walk in their own body is really, really good. The way it's shot is really weird. It's like a fisheye lens, like you're looking through a peephole from a door. So that's pretty unique in some spots. The dialogue is hilarious. It's definitely a movie you can only watch once, but it's entertaining as hell. Like, you know, Emma Stone saying shit like, "I've been thrice cocked," and stuff is pretty funny. And she does get cocked a lot, to her point, a lot. There is a lot of furious jumping, as she calls it, in this film. Her character calls it furious jumping.
Don't watch it with the kids around.
Do not watch it with kids around. It's entertaining. It's one of those
I'm probably never going to watch it.
You may never watch it. It's on Hulu. But I will say, if you can, it's one of those movies where you're like, this is some weird shit. I'm just going to keep watching it, you know? That's the kind of movie you're watching. But spoiler alert, at the end, this movie came out in 2023. So I feel like, you know, you can talk about it. Basically, the big twist at the end was that the person William brought back to life, she was pregnant with a baby, and he was not able to save the woman's brain. So he took her unborn child's brain and put it in her head. And that's why she is learning the way she is. So then it's kind of fucked up, because you're like, this is like a child in a grown woman's body. And she's like, you know, banging all these dudes. Yeah. And so it's like, you get that at the end and you're like, holy shit, this is really weird.
Makes you feel dirty. You just watch it, probably.
Yeah, it makes you feel really, really fucked up that you just watched this. Mark Ruffalo plays his character very well, he does a pretty good job. I will say it's a different look of Mark Ruffalo versus his Hulk character from the MCU. But it is cool to see him in something else. Not as good as whenever I saw Downey in Oppenheimer, but it is cool to see some of those characters do other things. Other than that, definitely check it out. The performances are there. It's a well-shot film. It's a well-acted film. I can't really say anything bad about it. I did go ahead and I had some free coupons from work. And I didn't see Kung Fu Panda 2 or 3, but I went ahead and took the kids to see Kung Fu Panda 4. It's okay. It's all right. You know,
you haven't seen the whole saga, Matt, so you know. You're not down with it.
I guess I'm not down with it. I'm gonna have to watch 2 and 3, I guess. But
I don't think I ever saw 3.
Some of the stuff was good.
And yeah, I think we have 3 on our Vudu account, because one of those like got free when you signed up for Vudu or whatever back in the day.
Okay.
I don't think I ever watched it. I remember I saw 2. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. He does they do feature that Baby One More Time cover that Jack Black does. You got to wait for the end of the film to hear him sing it, though. I feel like he maybe got this film greenlit because of his success in Super Mario Brothers movie. But he is good at playing a Kung Fu Panda. I will say that Dustin Hoffman returns.
I don't know if I'd say that because of Super Mario Brothers. I mean, Kung Fu Panda's had the animated series on Netflix. I mean, you know, it's been in the public eye for a while. I don't think it's going anywhere. So they judge its success on, you know, downloads and people watching on Netflix, things like that. So, you know,
yeah,
because you got to think Mario just came out last year. So this movie's probably been in production for a couple of years, you know?
So yeah. That's fair to say. Yeah. But other than that, I did watch Damsel, starring Millie Bobby Brown, starring the Queen is played by Jenny from Forrest Gump. It took me a little bit to realize who she was. But it's if you've seen the trailer, you see it's Millie Bobby Brown battling against a dragon. And it's a good film. I like it. I think the ending is I didn't see the ending coming. It's not like a big twist or anything like that. But it's a good film. I liked it. It's got action. It's got, you know, some romance in it, I guess, because as you see from the trailer, Millie Bobby Brown's got to marry a prince she hardly knows for the good of her kingdom. And of course, from the trailer, you see dragon's breath. That's because there is a dragon in the film, and she does exchange some fight with the dragon. So if you're into swords, sorcery, dragons, all that cool stuff, definitely check it out if you have a Netflix subscription. It was cool seeing her in something else other than Stranger Things. She better hop on season five. Yeah.
Well, it's filming right now.
Yeah.
Here's my thing with her, man. I don't know. Everything I've seen her in outside of Stranger Things, I don't buy into her, man. Even in Godzilla, I'm kind of like, she's just there. You know, I tried to watch the Enola Holmes. Even that,
it didn't look that great. Yeah.
I don't know. Something about her, man. Like, she's cool in a cast with Stranger Things or other people, but she's like, I don't think she's
not a good lead.
She's not the next Emma Stone. Yeah, that's for sure. Okay. She's nothing spectacular. Yeah. You know, I mean,
that's fair.
Yeah. You know, I guess she signed some deal with Netflix because of her Stranger Things. So it seems like she's done a lot of Netflix flicks, you know.
It was on, I forgot about it because there wasn't, I didn't feel like it was advertised highly. But you know, me and the wife kind of like that sword and sorcery kind of stuff. And it was good enough to merit a watch. I will say it's good enough. It's a solid B. Give it a solid B.
I suppose.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into today's feature film, man. I think we've trekked along here.
Yeah.
Man, we're usually not this late in the show doing the feature film. That's okay. We got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, lots to talk about.
Man, you know, this movie came out in, what year was this, 81?
82 in August.
After the success of, Stallone, you know, of course, was pretty much an unknown actor until he made the first couple of Rocky movies. And so he started getting, you know, offers for other roles, and you know, obviously he started this is kind of his to me, this movie is his beginning of being cast in tough guy films, you know.
Yes.
But this is probably one of the better ones of that era, you know.
Yep.
And that said, it very much fits in 1982. Like, you cannot make this movie today in the same way. You can make the story of a Vietnam veteran who's mistreated and not taken care of and looked down upon by people, but you couldn't do certain things in this film, you know, like you did back in 1982. And we're talking, of course, First Blood, the original Rambo film, starring Sylvester Stallone and Brian Dennehy. And man, first off, the bad guys in this movie are that's probably my biggest, like, Sylvester's great in the movie. You know, this is still early in his career, where he's really acting his ass off. He's doing a good job of everything he does. You buy into his PTSD Vietnam soldier and trying to just find his way. He's searching for his old friend. Let's just summarize this. He's searching for his buddy from Nam, trying to meet up with him. He's trying to, you know, he's basically kind of staggering, looking for a job, trying to get back off his feet. You know, as people know, in the late 70s, early 80s, there were a lot of vets that were, you know, people believed were mistreated by the government and were left on the streets. And this kind of plays off that whole thing happening back then.
A lot of people were not very supportive of the Vietnam War. So when they came home, they felt like they had no voice, no place.
Right. No place to be. And so he's just looking to get off his feet. And he runs into this town where this sheriff is basically corrupt in the town and doesn't want any outsiders in the town. He likes his town running how he is. And come to find out, he's one of those people that doesn't support those soldiers in the war. Though the movie doesn't convey that real well, I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, you know? Because it's revealed the sheriff's a Korean War veteran.
Right.
So he does have a sense of duty, but he views the Vietnam soldiers different. Right.
They just don't use the proper dialogue to convey it as well as they should have, I felt.
Correct.
And between him and his deputies, at times in this movie, it feels like his deputies don't agree with him, but then they kind of continue to agree with him. It's kind of weird.
Well, David Caruso, for sure. His deputy definitely doesn't
agree. But yet he plays along with it for fear of his own job and fear of his own life. So basically, they try to run Rambo out of town. It doesn't work. They arrest him. And they never once press charges on him, which is the most bizarre part, because it's like you would in today's audiences, you'd have to explain that better. That's one of the things where you couldn't make it the same way today. Yeah. A 2023 audience, you have to explain them, well, why is he getting arrested? This doesn't make any fucking sense.
Vagrancy. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, vagrancy is not going to hold in 2023. Yeah. You know, and so he escapes jail and ends up in the woods nearby. And Brian Dennehy and the sheriff and his troops go after him, essentially. And he starts, one of them accidentally gets killed. And then before that, he ends up, it's funny, Rambo never kills anyone in this movie directly. It's pretty much all self-defense. He's trying to defend himself. And his former commander shows up and he's trying to get him out of there. And that's another part. The commander plays like he's on Rambo's side, but yet he also...
Richard Crenna.
He also agrees that y'all need to arrest Rambo because he killed someone, which I didn't quite understand that. Like, if you're this military commander, you have the power to get him out of there, and you know he's not really a bad guy, you're still letting them arrest him at the end of the film, which I thought was a little strange. But it is what it is. It played for the movie. And it basically comes down to them going after Rambo. He warns the sheriff and his men to stop going after him because you're going to end up with more dead men. And sheriff, of course, doesn't listen, and more men end up dying. And eventually, though, they do get Rambo out of there, and he does get arrested, but not before Rambo does seek a little revenge and kill the evil sheriff by the end of the film. So this movie, you know, it's been some years since I've seen it, and it was definitely a refresher rewatching it. And I forgot how quickly this movie plays out. It happens, it's only an hour and a half long, so it plays really fast.
Yes.
It's a nice quick watch, not a bad watch. And it's a good movie. I actually really enjoy it, but it's just like, it's so stuck in 80s problems as far as filmmaking, the way it's shot, the way the story's told. And again, I feel like, man, I'm way smarter than this movie is than when it came out. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. But just some of the dialogue whenever the sheriff's like, we're still going after him. And Troutman's like, then get yourself a bunch of body bags.
Yeah. And I think this movie works so well because of Sylvester and his selling of the character of Rambo and how
big fucking time
badass he is, you know? Because most of the other characters are all throwaways. You know, you don't give a shit about any of these police officers. And it's one of those movies where, like, you're supposed to care about the police officers because they're the quote-unquote good guys, but yet you also care about Rambo because as an audience member, you're watching this and realize, man, he didn't do nothing, man. It's not fair. Leave him
exactly
alone. He's just trying to find his buddy, and he's upset his buddy died. He just wants to eat a hot meal and maybe find a job. That's all he wants to do, you know? And so you side with him more, and you don't give a shit that he kills a bunch of police officers or assholes, you know? You look like you were going to say something. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's based off a book. In the book, Rambo does kill a lot of police officers before he's killed in the end. In this film, because Stallone had so much star power at the time because of Rocky, he was able to get the dialogue changed a little bit to where, you know, he didn't want to hurt anybody, but he did what he had to do to survive, setting up booby traps, going to the last possible second before he kills somebody and holds the knife to Troutman's neck and saying, "I could have killed you all right here. Let me go now, or else you're going to have a war that you're not ready for." And then he leaves. And then they're like, "Call in the National Guard." And that's whenever he finds out he gets a call. They're like, you messed with the wrong guy. Green Beret, Vietnam, Congressional Medal of Honor. And they're like, "Yeah, how are you going to spin that one, asshole? I know all you're thinking all his deputies are like, oh shit."
Yeah, man. And that's what I thought was crazy too, is I'm watching it and I had forgotten about the part where you said they brought in the National Guard. I'm like, really? I'm sitting here watching. I'm even talking on the TV. You're calling the National Guard for one man? You pussy ass cops. Just leave him alone at this point.
Yeah, dude.
And I think my biggest problem with the film is that I go back to his commander. He does nothing to help him. He tries to convince him over the radio to bring himself in. It's not convincing at all. As an audience member, I'm like, I'm not buying into this. Rambo's not stupid. You're stupid. You know? And again, it's that 80s dialogue. It's like, this is the best you could come up with. It's like, you almost should have just left the commander all out. Once he showed up to warn the police and said, okay, you're on your own. That should have been it. But you keep bringing this commander back into scenes, and he adds nothing to the movie other than a small voice from Rambo's past to maybe get inside his head a little bit, but then it doesn't work. Yeah. Rambo's like, oh, no, fuck it. I'm going to kill them all anyway. You know, it's like, oh, and I think that's like if you were to make this today, you would have to have, again, a reason why you're arresting him. The cops would be smarter, more badass. You would probably have it take place. Maybe a special team goes after him. You know, you'd have to make it a little bit tougher. You know, you have to make audiences believe in it a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
And why does a small town have the police officer have access to a helicopter? That was interesting. Like the park rangers I could see nearby, but like sheriff's office just goes and picks up a helicopter. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, in a small town, that doesn't make sense.
It's like, yeah, why would they need that? I could see the park ranger nearby. Maybe there's a small hospital that has it, but why do the police have one? So you're telling me the small town has access to at least three helicopters then? The hospital, the park rangers, and the police department? That's like,
that's a lot of resources.
Yeah, man. You know,
what are the taxes like in this town, man?
I know, right?
High taxes or something?
And then it's like snowy and cold, you know. But then that was another thing. Like the movie starts out, it's kind of snowy and cold, right? And then the scene in the woods is shot and they're wearing jackets, but where did all the snow go? Did you notice that?
Yeah.
It's like it's green.
But it really was cold outside. Like Stallone was freezing whenever he didn't have his jacket on.
So it makes you wonder what time of the year they shot it. Maybe they shot early fall, late winter. Maybe the snow was melting off. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. It was just really cold. And of course, the only thing that, you know, this movie, and Stallone has talked about this in interviews before, like this is his favorite Rambo movie and one of the favorite movies he did. And he doesn't regret making the sequels, but he has talked about in his career where he felt like because of the success of the Rocky sequels, the makers of Rambo felt it needed sequels too. And he realized now, like, yeah, maybe we should just done one. That was enough, you know. But of course, then he embraced it years later with the legacy sequels he's done in the last 5 or 6 years. You know, he kind of
They had been trying to make this. Yeah, they've been trying to make the film for over 10 years at this point, like since 71. The problem was that every writer that took it on wanted to make it like the book. They wanted to pay tribute and stay in line with the book and make it to where the character died at the end. And he didn't, you know, the studio didn't like it. And it wasn't until this director came by, Kotcheff, with a score written by Goldsmith, who does a great job. Goldsmith's a great composer. He's no Williams, but he definitely is right under that tier. Makes great composures for movies. It wasn't until he, you know, after going through a couple different choices, first choice was Clint Eastwood by the studio. And then they wanted De Niro, possibly. Then, you know, they went with Stallone, and he wasn't the first choice. For the sheriff, they did want to go with Gene Hackman for the sheriff, but he turned it down. And Kirk Douglas actually had filmed in the role of Troutman up until like a week or so before the release of the film, or the finalization of the film. But I guess he had like a some fallout.
You got the background. He quit right before filming commenced.
He quit right before filming. I guess he all of a sudden he had some disagreement with the script, and maybe it was to your point, Mark. Maybe he felt like the character just didn't make sense. Like maybe, you know, Troutman would have done something different. That's why. But yeah, that's why we didn't get Kirk Douglas. But we got who we got. A lot of Vietnam vets actually praised the film because they felt like they could identify with the character of Rocky. You know, coming back to a place where they're not welcome, where they're not viewed as high, you know, echelon as like this Korean War veteran sheriff that they have over there. You know, people who fought, you know, a different war during a different time under different circumstances and were met with more praise than the Vietnam veterans were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I think the movie shines, is showing a light on that. And I'm also a little surprised you being into weapons, man. This movie created the Rambo knife, which is still sold today. You know, I mean, it was a knife created exclusively for this film, and it became so popular that hunters and people still buy it today. You know, that Stallone asked for it to be made. He wanted something unique that hadn't been seen before, and it made sense. And I thought that was pretty cool, you know, the Rambo knife.
Yeah,
you can walk in most academies and buy a Rambo knife, you know?
Yeah. And whenever he gets caught with it, they're like, what's this for? He goes, hunting. It's like, what are you going to hunt with that?
Movie though, it's a good, enjoyable film. You just have to set your mind of when it was made, I think, and realize it. And then some of it doesn't hold up as well as other parts. You know, I think Stallone's good at it. Like I said, it's a good score. It's well paced, you know, well directed, and overall it's a solid
best
film, man.
One in the series. It's the best one in the series for me.
I remember two being decent. I remember three being not
the
that
action.
Great.
The action is good, and that's because Cameron helped with the action.
No, and two.
Some people don't realize that. Yeah, it was uncredited.
Three was uncredited. Three was kind of cashing in on the commando thing, right? Just one-man army kind of thing, if I remember right.
Yeah, that's what they tried to turn him into. And then they tried to make it the Russian-Afghanistan conflict. Yeah. Troutman is captured, and Rambo has to go in and save Troutman. But by the time this film was released, the Russians had already backed out of Afghanistan, which made the movie a moot topic. So it didn't really reach audiences like they thought it would. And then, part of the issue.
Yeah. And then that fourth one they made just a few years back, I couldn't even remember what that was about other than 5 minutes in when I see bodies getting ripped apart. I'm like, wait, what is this, a Rambo movie or a Predator movie? I was like, what am I watching? It was ridiculous. Yeah. Like how much blood and guts can we throw in that movie?
That movie actually got praised for like showing the brutality of war. And it's set a record for how many people died in an action film, because it wanted to outdo Rocky III. Rocky III had the most, I mean, not Rocky III, Rambo III had the most deaths in an action film. And so this Rambo tried to outdo it. And some people view it better than three. But that, you know, maybe two had better action than Rambo or John Rambo, like in some markets it says. And I don't think either of us have seen Last Blood, but I didn't hear anything about
terrible.
It. Last Blood. Yeah.
But, you know, Rambo, man, it's a, or First Blood, excuse me. That's the actual title of the original Rambo. Mm-hmm. It's a good movie. And it's definitely has its place in 1982 lore. Definitely that time. I think if you made it today, you'd make it. I think you could make, you definitely could tell the story of a Vietnam vet coming back from the war, but I just think you'd have to smarten it up a little bit for today's audiences. I think it's fair to say.
Definitely.
You know,
gotta make it reach people.
Yeah. You're not going to buy into the corrupt sheriff thing anymore. And that he's going to get away with all that, you know, because I mean, you know, Rambo could have just killed all of them, walked right out of town. Nobody probably would even notice, you know?
Yeah.
If we're being honest, yeah, it's like, you know, but he didn't. He tried to do the right thing and escape.
You'd have to get Stallone to play Troutman. Get an
older version of himself.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, solid film, man. And, you know, and worth the watch. And we've been wanting to do it for a while. And we finally got around to talking some First Blood. You know,
yeah,
First
man.
First.
And, game. It sparked. We also got a game from this, a couple games, and a television series, an animated series.
The 80s were bizarre, man. Okay. Like, there's all this talk about in the last 10 to 15 years of modern culture, right? And marketing of rated R products to children, okay? Whether it be the John Wick films or video games, you know, the video games is the big one, you know, marketing move games like Call of Duty and Cyberpunk and to children, even though some of those games aren't for children. Definitely don't let your kids play Cyberpunk. You know, but man, the 80s were doing this shit. Rambo, RoboCop, they had animated series on them. They had action figures. You know, then in the early 90s, we had Alien, the Predator action figures. I'm like, but I guess you'd have the internet, you'd have the media covers you had back then. So it wasn't that big of a deal if there was Rambo and Saturday morning cartoons or RoboCop and the Ultra Police, or Rambo action figures or Rambo video games. You know, that's pretty crazy, man, to think that that was a thing, man. People forget that the 80s were wild, you know,
but they were, man.
It wasn't as wild, I guess, as our century is, or our decade now, apparently.
You know, I didn't mention it earlier in the film, earlier in the show, but I did swing by the gas station from Texas Chainsaw Massacre this week. We went on a little road trip, Belleville, Brenham, Giddings, Bastrop, and then back. But it's funny. I was
a long day trip.
It is a long day trip. It was long. We're out all day, but it was funny. My almost six-year-old were driving back, and he's like, "I want to watch it. I want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre when we get home." And I was like, and she's like, "No, you can't watch that movie." And I said, "Well, you know," I said, "That movie was released today." I said, "It would be rated PG." And she's like,
"No,
no way. Yeah, dude. No. Only a gallon of blood in the entire film.
It still wouldn't be PG.
It has less blood than
already has nothing to do with blood. Already has nothing to do with blood.
They don't even show the violence
elements too.
They cut away from it.
I guarantee it would still be rated R if it came out today.
13
thematic, 13. Thematically, it's too heavy. I guarantee you, if you put that film from the MPAA today, it got an X rating back then. It had to be trimmed for X. Even today, it would get an R rating. Yeah. Thematically, it's just too intense.
They made a mistake. They made a
cannibalism
mistake.
Things like that. I guarantee it's an R rating.
I guess so.
Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, well, I guess incest, you're right, because you
incest,
know what?
Is cannibalism?
Was Judge Dredd with Stallone rated R?
Yeah, and he fought for that being rated R because he said it only had like one bad word in it, and he fought for why is it not PG-13?
Oh yeah, yeah. And it had Stallone cannibals in it.
Yeah. Stallone was mad about that. Yeah, but didn't have cannibals in the same way that Texas Chainsaw.
Not in the same way. Yeah, different kind.
No, Stallone was mad because they were told it was going to be a PG-13 cut, and they ended up getting an R rating because of a couple of words in it. And I remember reading something about there was one scene that was specific to why it got an R rating. And, you know, but anyway, but yeah, no way Texas Chainsaw would be rated PG-13 today. Thematically, it's just too intense. There's rated R movies with less in it than that are R rated, you know.
That's fair. So, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. You're psycho.
Did you expect any less?
Next week on the show, we're going to We're gonna watch the. This is kind of an obscure film. I mean, film buffs have heard of it. Sci-fi buffs have heard of it. Hell, the listeners have probably seen this movie or heard of it and didn't realize you watched it because it'll show up on Saturday matinees back when we all had television before we got streaming everything. And it stars Peter Weller, and it's a little low budget kind of sci-fi film, and it's based on a short story by Philip K. Dick, of course, the writer of Blade Runner, and mm-hmm. it's called Screamers.
A world overlooked and long forgotten by those who settled it. For Commander Joseph A. Hendrickson, it is worse than hell. It is home.
What are they?
There is a new terror in their midst.
We call it a screamer. It was developed for us by Alliance on Earth to neutralize the war on the ground here.
How do you know it's dead?
And they yanked this brain out.
Pretty smart.
Yeah, maybe too smart.
This one seems to have modified itself.
It was designed to protect them from their enemies. Until it turned its sights on them.
Are they alive?
No one knows. They make themselves now.
I heard the screaming, and then it got very quiet. Nothing except the smell of death.
Chuck, we got a new kind of screamer.
It was like a person.
What are they supposed to look like?
Oh, you mean who are they supposed to look like?
They're smarter now. That's how they get into our bunkers.
Once it gets inside, that's when the killing starts.
Now, the only way to tell man...
He's one of them.
...from machine... No! ...is by the sound of their scream.
Things ain't what they used to be.
And it's been a long time since I've seen this. I remember watching this back in the day with my dad and being kind of terrified from it a bit. And I realize now that it was kind of silly to be terrified from it. But when you're young and watch this, like, there's some pretty freaky stuff in it. but it's just a little sci-fi flick about these interplanetary exposition that ends up landing to negotiate a peace treaty. And it turns out that there's some bad, evil robots on this planet. And so they go to war with them. It's that simple, but it's a pretty cool flick, if I remember correctly. Maybe I'll eat my words later, since, as I said, it's been a long, long time since I've watched this. Probably even longer I've watched this since I've watched Rambo.
Oh, wow.
But I'm kind of looking forward to rewatching Screamers this week and talking about it next week on the show. So it should be fun. And until then, the rebelradiopodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs and things. And again, thanks to Matt over at the Houston Toy Museum for being accommodating, having a good time there yesterday.
Yeah.
And to both our families. And that was fun. And as always, to you listeners, thanks for listening. And as we make it to our 10th anniversary, until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there
and do it.